He is Robin Leach. He is Jay DeMarkin. This is Car Keys. And?
And is starting the show.
I would like to start out with a little safety story. I don't know if any of you watched the Formula One Grand Prix in Bahrain yesterday morning. But Romain Grosjean, who is a French driver who has been in Formula One for some time now, actually retiring most likely at the end of this year, had a pretty horrific crash on the first lap of the race. And hit, got tangled up in traffic and ended up going off the track at an angle of about, I would say, somewhere between 30 and 45 degrees and hit a safety barrier, a triple level Armco steel barrier. And the car burst into flames, which is something not often seen anymore in Formula One, and I want to talk about a little bit about fires in cars. But when all was said and done, and we actually knew the driver was okay, we were allowed to see footage of the crash itself. And it turns out the car actually went through, split two rails, and the cockpit, the front part of the cockpit of the car, actually went through the guardrail, and it ended up on the other side. The driver, Romain Grosjean, was able to extricate himself from the fire, but he was in the fire for about 20 seconds, and the car was engulfed in flames. Keep in mind, these cars have about 25 gallons of fuel at the start of a race. So even though most likely not the whole fuel cell was on fire, it was a real fire. And he was able to jump over the guardrail and with some help get to safety. And it turns out the driver's okay with minor burns on the hands, and that's pretty much it. And that's pretty remarkable. And it's remarkable for several reasons. One is on these open cockpit cars, just last year or the year before, they've added what looks to be like a roll bar in the front of the cockpit that actually was the reason the driver was not decapitated in this accident, in this crash, not an accident. We all of us racing fans have come to realize how far we've come in the last few years as far as safety is concerned. And even though not all of those safety measures or precautions that are taken in racing are transferable to driving on the road, some of them are, and safety barriers are certainly one of them. So I don't know, Robin, do you have anything to say at this point?
Not about that specifically, but I'd like to hear your comments on about fires in general before I add something in that department, because I have an idea, and if you've covered, I'm not going to add much.
So I think on fire, I mean, in the cars, what's remarkable is that the drivers, suits they wear are fire retardant to a point that's pretty incredible, actually. Even though they look like just spandex suits these days, they do a very good job at protecting the drivers from burns. What's also interesting is that it is the first time in a long time that we actually see one of those Formula One race cars burst into flames. And same thing on the roads. And if we all remember gas tanks that you could see from in back of the car. And we remember Ford Pintos and even Jeep Grand Cherokees of the 90s having issues with fuel tanks exploding when the cars were hit from behind. And I just think we've come a long way in fire avoidance.
Safety. Prevention techniques.
Yes, on road cars. But I also still think we should all have fire extinguishers in cars because time and time again, I see cars on the side of the road that just burn to the ground.
Okay.
But that's a whole other story.
May I jump in on that?
Sure.
The question I have for you, Jay, because I think it's a great idea, and we have broached this on this show before, I don't know how long ago. My comment, I believe, at that time, not rebutting the idea of it being good, was, here's the issue I have with fire extinguishers. Where do you keep them so that you can get at them effectively, quickly, when you sense or know that a fire is occurring?
Well,
against the idea of panicking at that point and thinking the first thing I need to do is get out of the car and not worry about trying to grab a extinguisher. You can't put it under the seat, or can you?
Yes.
You can't. Can you have enough presence of mind being seat belted in to be able to, some of these seat belts, when you are braking a car, lock in place so that you can't extend them to reach down or across to get at something you might want to get at.
Well, here
there are all sorts of things that to me are possible barriers to the effectiveness of the concept of having a fire extinguisher in the car.
Well, here's the thing. And going back to this crash, and then I'll answer the question. You know, if you are in a crash like that driver was yesterday, and you end up being unconscious, and you have to wait for help to come and pull you out of a burning vehicle, the chances of that happening are slim. Only because for anybody to get there to the scene will take some time, and by then, you know, the vehicle will be engulfed in flames, and these people will probably not have any kind of protection, and you know, it's kind of pointless to try to jump into a burning car, or any kind of fire, for that matter. So that's one thing. So being, you know, able to get out of the car means that you were not injured to the point of not being able to get out. So all the other safety protections, like seat belts, airbags in passenger cars, hands devices in racing, helmets, all that has made it such that drivers who are conscious can get out of the car in a hurry. Now, when it comes to where do you want to place the fire extinguisher in a passenger car, by law, in all the European countries where you have to have a fire extinguisher in the car, they are located in the front, in under the passenger seat, so within reach of a driver, and you know, it is fairly easy to reach over and get them and use them.
Okay,
I vaguely actually
write to you on this point because you go to Belgium and your relatives, whoever it is you're going to see, have a Ford. What did they have for you? Drove their Ford, whatever it was. And is there indeed a fire extinguisher under the passenger seat of that vehicle? Do you know that for a fact?
The car won't pass safety inspection if you don't have one, period.
Okay.
And it has to be renewed every several years.
Given the issue I have with the general knowledge base of actual drivers of cars in our country, and I don't think the knowledge is very big in terms of things like that, it almost makes me think a salesperson needs to mandate an instruction, actual instruction event at a point of delivery of a vehicle, should vehicles get to have fire extinguisher standard equipment sometime in the distant future, because I don't think it's going to happen too quickly, about where it is under the passenger seat and is it a quick release thing and all that kind of thing. And the next time you go to Belgium, I'd love to have you test yourself with how fast you can get it, get at it and get out of the car, just simulated, so you could update this conversation.
What would seem more relevant, in addition, is to get people conscious that you can keep a fire extinguisher in a car. What I was going to interject and say a little bit earlier is that I remember, and this goes back decades, but yes, that was always a feature in the car in Europe. Always, you couldn't do anything. You couldn't do anything without the fire extinguisher, and it's just I think it's very much an American thing that
Europeans have been advanced in some of these things for a long time. We know that. Have commented on it, but I won't dissuade any listener from thinking that this is a great idea.
So
it isn't going to happen quickly because things don't happen quickly like that, and for the most part, we are very lucky, I think, in car design and all that, and car fires are very rare. Some of them may be more prevalent in impact accidents on the superhighways if a tractor-trailer impacts a car, for example. And they, of course, are carrying two saddle tanks of either diesel or petrol types of fossil fuels that theoretically are in, I don't know how safe those tanks are, but they could be very explosive and cause a big problem. But I still think knowing how people react in panic situations doesn't necessarily have them ready psychologically and physically ready to react and grab for a fire extinguisher. Now, well, I don't think a fire extinguisher would put out a major fire because they're not big enough to hold enough stuff.
So
they
here's
might
the deal.
Keep somebody safe to get out of a compartment fire in the car because
so
all those
here's
materials
the deal.
Are plastic and very flammable.
There's a major difference between a crash.
Yes.
A fire that starts because in a crash, okay, and the car gets engulfed in flames, the fire extinguisher is of probably very little help in that case. Where it becomes useful is your car overheats on the Hutchinson Parkway in the middle of summer when you're in traffic, and you pull over, and it overheats, and now you're not moving anymore, and then things light up under the hood. And in those circumstances, you have plenty of time to grab a fire extinguisher and be on the ready. And that's usually how cars burn to the ground. Not always, but when it does happen, and I do agree with you, it happens less now than it used to because of better car design. Anyway.
Well, I think it's a good topic to have discussed. I hope some listeners think it's a good topic to have listened to. Can we move on?
Yeah, I just want a quick note on the other aspect of this safe. What this crash made me think about is safety barriers, and in racing they now use triple guardrails, so three levels of guardrails.
And they also use rubber
those
tires,
guardrails,
don't they? Like at Limerock.
Yeah, and those Armcos are still discussed being whether they're efficient or not. Cars should not be able to split between two railings and the whole car go through the hole. But, double and triple guardrails are better than single guardrails. And again, not to come back with the whole European thing, but double layers of guardrails have been the norm in Europe for, I'd say, 25, 30 years now. And you're driving along highways here, and you still see single rails that won't really hold up much. And those guardrails have to be fixed once they've been damaged.
Correct. And I note that it takes the states many times. It takes states months to repair damaged guardrails. There are several almost flattened side guardrails on some local roads around our broadcast area that I have been noting. I noted that the Connecticut Transportation Department put in a whole new roll of galvanized steel. I think that's what they're made of, along Route 4 going between Cornwall Bridge and Goshen recently. But there are some other older rails that are flattened, and they're usually, I see them mostly on corners where cars maybe have run off, have left the road, the actual driving passage, what pathway on the roads, and hit a guardrail, maybe to avoid a deer, maybe falling asleep or something like that. They do a certain, they seem to be somewhat effective at keeping the car from getting over them, although I agree, Jay, I'm not sure that the height of our guardrails are as effective as they could be. Now, I assume you're not talking about the height of those guardrails or triple height level. You're talking about three horizontal layers of guardrails, right? So there's one,
there's a height
one,
you don't want to
second
be,
or third.
I mean, about
this
three,
was an airborne crash, I believe.
Racing on some racetracks.
Was this an airborne crash that occurred?
No, there was no airborne. It went plowed right through the right.
And
through
it got through between two sections.
Yes,
maybe.
And there's better design these days. There's Jersey barriers, as they're called, those big concrete blocks that are designed to. If a car hits them at an angle, the car will actually roll over and flip and not go over the railing and come back and stay on the side of the highway that it was traveling on.
Right.
And I 30 years ago, I saw that on the highway. I saw a car in front of me at 100 miles an hour. Don't ask me what I was doing at 100 miles an hour. It was Europe.
No, but I was just going to say, your speed is often, as we listen to this, and I did not see the, obviously, race, but speed is frequently a factor when you are plowing into things, no?
It's a contributing factor.
It could
but the
be.
Point, my point here, with those jersey barriers, I've seen how effective they actually are. They're pretty hard, but if you hit them at an angle, yes, you will go on your roof, but the car will come back on the side of the highway, and you'll end up tumbling, at least going in the direction of traffic and not ending, you know, on the other side of the highway and getting hit head-on, which was what I feared when I saw this guy, you know, 30 years ago hit the wall at an angle. But anyway.
All right,
I'd like to take this to back to another direction, which we've been talking about recently, which is electric vehicle range details, because we've been talking about what's enough to constitute giving the American public confidence enough to switch over from fossil fuel vehicles to electric vehicles as we're going forward. And I'm looking at article that on the Ford Mach-E, and Ford is already upping the mileage range of the Mach-E model from, 200 was the minimum. I think it was the base model of the all-wheel drive version, upwards to now different models get different mileage ranges, because I guess they're either rear-wheel drive only or all-wheel drive. And just like rear two-wheel drive cars probably get slightly better mileage, gas, fossil fuel mileage than all-wheel drive models, though there's not much difference anymore. I don't think they've gotten to be so efficient. battery mileage has been one of the big issues that has been stunting American interest in electric vehicles, maybe with the Tesla line being the exception at the moment. Because it's been on the market, it's been on the road, now we're up 7 years now, Jay, on the Tesla Model S?
Yeah, Model S. Yeah,
and they've been, Elon Musk has been gradually increasing mileage range on those vehicles, and the newer ones are all up, getting closer to 300 miles and upwards. As battery development continues and or battery size and installation increases, but the Ford Mach-E, which is a Mustang out the door, is going to range from between, I believe, $52,000 and $64,000 for these variants, which is way above what I call our basic general average cost of new vehicles, Jay, which I think you said is up, it's hit it around $37,000 to $38,000 now.
Yeah.
Across the line. If you average everything in. And the other thing I wanted to say, just for anybody who's having to know anything about the pickup truck situation, where GM was going to build pickup trucks for Nikola, they've dropped that plan now because of Nikola's publicity problems about whether it was a real virulent company.
Is it a publicity problem, or is it an actual financial issue?
I think it's a combination, but the headline says GM drops plan to build Nikola's EV pickup.
Yeah.
That's as of 9 o'clock this morning. It came out of the automotive.
Right, but as everyone has figured out by now, the headline is supposed to get people to read the article.
That's correct, and I read a little bit of the article, and I think GM has gotten a little bit worried about being connected to Nikola, and wondering whether or not it would be a positive situation for the company. The content of the article is relatively small. They're going to be willing to supply fuel cell systems to Nikola, but company, I believe, is getting away from being willing to help build the proposed Badger electric pickup and doesn't want to have a financial stake in the company. According to this article, we don't need to bear that. It's not really a big newsworthy item for our listeners, I don't think.
All right. So, in the last 4 minutes, how would you like to? Since we did safety at the beginning, what do you? What is there more safety for regular drivers, such as don't go 100 miles an hour if you can avoid it, or is there anything else that you would like to convey?
Well, at the expense of being repetitive, I'm really upset about the lack of visibility that there is now in the dusk to nighttime transition of light in this particular part of the year, where it gets dark real early now. And there are a lot of people, because of the way life has changed over the last 6 months, they're using roads for bicycling, walking. And I got to tell you, the number of people that don't seem to understand that you should be walking facing the oncoming traffic instead of walking the same direction that we're going on the roadways is frightening, from the standpoint of being on narrow town roads more than highway roads, but all roads should be included, because, you know, people, you're not going to see the cars or the vehicle coming behind you if they've got to make an emergency turn or a maneuver, and you are not only not visible in the dusk to dark period transition, but you are, you know, you can't see what's coming behind you, and you are not going to be able to take evasive action, which you can do if you were actually walking facing the traffic. And it's really sort of at epidemic levels as far as my experience is concerned.
Flashing lights like on bicycles.
Yeah, you should be wearing something like a flashing light, a helmet with a front and back light. The bicyclists should all have the bright strobe red lights in the rear and the white lights in the front. And the other thing, that's what I wanted to say. Check your forward lighting systems in your cars, people, because there was a car coming at me the other day, not at me, but against my direction, the opposite direction of what I was traveling, that had only one light on it, and it was dark, and I couldn't tell whether it was a bicyclist without a strobe white light or whether it was a vehicle, because you could not see the silhouette of whatever it was that had this one light on. There weren't two parking lights or DRLs on this car. It was probably an older vehicle. It had one headlight on, and that was all you could see. So check your lights and see that they're all functioning properly in this nighttime lighting on the roads.
All right. Time to change your tires, too.
Right.
Anyway. Yeah.
He is Robin Leach. He is Jay DeMarkin. This is Car Keys.